are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you once again on this Thursday edition of the show. We've got a mailbag for you. Kind of flip things sideways this week. We started off the week with the Richie James interview, and so didn't get the full mailbag episode. Hit a couple questions on the Winky Wednesday episode yesterday, but I want to do a full mailbag here. Got a lot of questions mounting up that I want to get to and talk a little 49ers football with you guys. If anybody wants to get involved in any mailbag episodes, just say hi, whatever. Email lockedon49ers at gmail. Hit me up on Twitter at bdpeacock. Subscribe, rate, review the show, iTunes, Spotify. We are everywhere. Thank you so much for those of you who have been rating and reviewing. That definitely helps us, helps new people find this podcast and helps us grow. And looking ahead to next week, I'm going to do a Locked On Rams crossover with Brad Motter, who's host of Locked On Rams, and start looking at how things were reshaped in the NFC West this offseason. There was a question in yesterday's mailbag about predictions for NFC West teams, and I thought, you know, we need to get deeper into these NFC West teams, so it's about time we do post-draft and post-free agency crossover episodes and look a little bit deeper into the 49ers' opponents they'll be playing twice in 2018. We're going to start that probably on Tuesday with the Rams crossover with Mr. Brad Motter. Monday, probably to have a lot of Reuben Foster talk. So some news should happen with Thursday's proceedings, the preliminary hearing happening on Thursday. Today, if you're listening to the podcast, the day it arrives. And so we're going to get into some of that. And there is one mailbag question that I got last week, actually, that I haven't gotten into, and I actually want to talk a lot about it. It might take up about half an episode, so we'll get into that on Monday as well. Well, let's just get into it then. So that particular question, that is an email from my guy Solman, who's a frequent emailer of the podcast. He said, can you go through each pick of the 49ers 2018 draft class and give them a best-case comparison and a worst-case comparison based on what you've seen? This was inspired by your conversation with Brad Kelly, where he compared Pettis to Macklin. I think Pettis' worst-case scenario is Dante Hall. Thank you for the email, Solman. That's a great idea, and we do need to get a little bit deeper and continue to talk about this rookie class, get to know him. That's a fantastic idea. So I think on Monday I'm going to get into that, and it might take a few minutes, so I don't want to take up this entire podcast doing that. I want to do some draft comps, best-case, worst-case for what the player could be, and best-case, worst-case comps for each of the 49ers draft picks. So we'll do that on Monday's show. Oh, one thing real quick before we get to these mailbag questions is, speaking of Dante Pettis and, you know, Dante Hall and elite returners, there is the new rules that they're kicking around at the spring meetings in the NFL for the new kickoff proposal. So they're not going to do anything to punt returns, and that's where Dante Pettis has excelled as a punt returner. But it sounds like they're trying to make kickoffs more like punts, which will make them, one, more exciting and could actually make them more valuable to have that great returner also returning kickoffs. So this could go either two ways. They might do away with the kickoff completely and make it pretty much nullified and not exist, or they could make it more fun while they're trying to also make it less dangerous at the same time, which would be the ideal scenario if that played out. And then I think it would make that a little bit more value in that pick for Dante Pettis. But these are the rules they're proposing from what I've seen with the NFL kickoff proposal. So one, the biggest thing I think is for the kicking team, there's no running start. So the dudes that are all lined up there at the 35-yard line can't take off until the ball is kicked. Now, if the kicker can still kick it out of the back of the end zone, there's not going to be a return, so that won't matter. But they're trying to make less high-impact contact, high-impact collisions on these NFL kickoffs. So what it would be is the kicking team cannot get a running start off of the 35-yard line. They would have to have at least two players outside the numbers on each side of the formation, at least two players between the numbers and the hash, and so the remaining players could then be inside. So you can't have a bunch of players in the middle of the field. And I guess, you know, it doesn't – oh, yes, and you have to have five players on each side of the ball. So that changes things for onside kicks as well. because if you can't, you know, stack up everybody on one side of the ball that way and have those collisions, there's a lot of mean collisions sometimes on those onside kicks as well. It's like a one team, like it's like the kicking team's a fullback trying to clear guys out so the ball can go 10 yards. And it's just, yeah, a lot of bad collisions happen on kickoffs and even not on kickoffs that are even returned, because there's a lot of stuff that happens even on fair catches and balls to go out of the end zone. There's already a lot of contact happening on some of those plays. So that will get the kicking team further away from the returner, and you might have more time for the returner to make reads and make moves and a little more maneuverability there, and the ball and the defenders spread out a little bit more across the field as they come down the field, so they're not all coming in from the same angle. So maybe more gaps and more places to hit for return man, because usually those kickoffs, when they are returned for touchdowns, it's that same angle. It's like you just hit that one crease and then you're off in that angle toward that sideline, or it's the crease to the other way and you're off to the left side and taken off toward that sideline. So it's hitting that crease on that initial wave of returners, and there's not a lot of, jukes, not a lot of back and forth or great moves necessarily from, or vision from return man. It's just that you got to hit that one crease on kickoffs, and that's what makes them less fun to watch than punt returns. And I think you need less skill, less skill as a runner, I think, for the kickoff returns than the punt returns, because you don't have that short area moves you need to make as much on kickoffs. So that's the big one. No running start for the kicking team. Two players outside the numbers, two players between the hash and the numbers, and five players on each side of the ball, and of course the kicker in the middle. So no blocking is allowed in then the 15-yard window between that 35-yard line where they're kicking off and the 50-yard line, which is where the defense can then, or the returning team can start to line up. So that 15-yard area, no blocking. Prior to the ball hitting the ground or being touched, no contact, no blocking in that 15-yard zone. It's sort of like the safe zone. And then the 15 yards on the return side is called the setup zone. So you can have eight players in the setup zone. It's 15-yard setup zone from the 45-yard line to the 40-yard line. This is the returning team. And the setup zone is you have to have eight players there, and there's no wedge blocks allowed, which is key for the returning team as well. You know, you get the guys who cross arms and then go in and try to take out big chunks of the team that's coming down covering the kick. Wedge blocks was a bad one, and that's where a lot of injuries happen there. So no wedge blocks for the defense. Eight players in the 15-yard setup zone, which is still weird. I'm not really sure what they want to do with the setup zone and why that matters. And there might be more to the setup zone thing than just having players in that 15-yard area. This is, again, the returning team, a 15-yard setup zone between the 45-yard line and the opposite 40-yard line, which coincides, you know, that's 5 yards overlap between the no blocking zone and the setup zone, because the no blocking zone is between the 35-yard line and the 50. This is getting confusing. I think you need to see this on a field rather than me explaining it. But basically what they're doing is they're trying to make the NFL kickoff more like a punt, which is awesome. It's awesome for, it'll be more fun to watch. I think it'll make those kickoff returners actually more valuable again. Aside from the kicks that actually get kicked out of the back of the end zone, which will probably likely be the thing that most kickers are trying to do, and that'll still happen quite often unless they decide to move it back again. But, NFL kickoff proposal. The other proposal is basically they're going to try to do away with it, which is like, at this point, with the way the kickoff is, that would be fine with me too. So they do need to change it. So make it more fun, make it more like a punt, or get rid of it altogether. And those look like they are the two proposals right now. And I think this one I just mentioned with all those new rules is likely something we're going to see in 2018 as the new kickoff in the NFL. All right, let's move on to the mailbag. Moving along to the questions I'm going to get to today. Let's start with Twitter and John Wick. He says, loving the draft breakdown episodes. Really can't wait for the preseason games to start already. Which rookie will have the biggest impact of the 2018 season, and where is the best wet burrito in San Francisco? Ooh, that's a good question. The specific wet burrito. Let's start with the wet burrito question, because the importance of finding the best wet burrito means you got to find which place has the best wet contents, right? So we're talking Chili Colorado, Chili Verde. My favorite is Chili Verde. So you're speaking my language here, John. And so there's a few spots. One spot I like, actually, And it's an old school spot. It's been there forever on Valencia Street, Porto Alegre. They have my favorite dish in San Francisco, which is pozole verde. So that's the green pozole, which is awesome. It's got bacon and chicken, and it's a big bowl, super flavorful soup. It's awesome. And that's what I always get if I go there, so I don't do a wet burrito. But they do a chili verde burrito, and I have had that burrito wet, and it's pretty solid. So basically what you're looking for is the places that do those stewed meats well, and then you get that right on top of your burrito. It's very good stuff. By the way, the best wet burrito I've ever encountered in the world, a little bit biased because this is close to home, because my wife's family's restaurant in Visalia, California, downtown, Alejandra's restaurant, go there, get the wet chili verde burrito. That is heaven. That is very good stuff. Let's see. Loving the draft pick breakdown. What was the question? Oh, yeah. Biggest impact rookie of the 2018 season. Well, he's not going to fill up the stat book, but Mike McGlinchey is going to be a starter from week one at right tackle. So if he protects Jimmy Garoppolo, then everything Jimmy Garoppolo is able to do, and everything Jerick McKinnon and the rest of the running backs are able to do in the running game, because that should be improved with Mike McGlinchey on the right side over Trent Brown, at least the running game side of it should be improved, then he's going to have the biggest impact. You know, it's not going to show up in the box score. I do worry. I mean, it's definitely he's going to be a better run blocker in this scheme than Trent Brown. But right away, he might be a worse pass blocker. So that's going to be the first thing I'm looking for in the preseason games and early on in the season. I want to see his pass blocking technique. There was a few pass blocking reps at Notre Dame where Mike McGlinchey was beaten instantly. Like, guys just got right around him, and he was he needs to work on his hand strength and being able to control linemen, because that's where he lost. It wasn't so much straight through him like a bull rush where they knocked him back into the quarterback or anything. And he has athleticism, so they weren't really running around him. So I don't know if it's a technique or a strength issue, but he needs to be better with his hands, because it looks strong when he locks in the running game. So that's an interesting thing to watch out for with Mike McGlinchey as the right side pass protector for Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think, at least right away, we talked about this yesterday on the episode, Dante Pettis is a little bit blocked at all three wide receiver positions, I think, week one. I think he'll have a chance to work in and be obviously a very good punt returner right away. But without injuries, it's going to be hard for him to jump in and have an impact. If one of those guys, especially Goodwin or Trent Taylor, is hurt, or he overtakes them and starts in place of them, then he can have an absolutely huge rookie season for the 49ers. But I'm going to say Fred Warner, because I think he's a guy that is perfectly fit for the 49ers defense under Robert Saleh. And I think he's going to jump in and earn one of those starting linebacker spots very early in the season, either at weak side or middle linebacker. Hopefully he's the tandem with Reuben Foster for a long time to come. And we're going to find out a lot more about the Reuben Foster situation on Thursday. Let's go to Rod. You guys talk about pizzas or Mexican food. What about burgers? Anywhere a must go? This is a very simple answer, and don't worry, guys, I'm not going to talk food this whole episode. This is the last one. But the question is, anywhere must go for burgers? My answer to that is no. There is no such thing as a must go for burgers, because, in my opinion, the best burgers are the ones you're cooking yourself on the grill. It's such an easy thing to make that you can do it as good or better than most of these burger places. I don't get the crazy, like, burger wars and like In-N-Out versus Five Guys. It's like they're both trash compared to the awesome like half pound burger you could make for yourself at home if you just put in the time, and you could put whatever toppings on it you want. The special sauce isn't that special. It's ketchup and mayonnaise. Don't get worked up about it. Make yourself your own burger. That's going to be the best burger you have if you know how to do it right. So no must go burger joints, in my opinion. But I do like a good burger. To Mr. Mike, in light of recent news surrounding Foster's domestic violence case with his ex-girlfriend planning to testify, is it safe to say Foster will remain a Niner and potentially play this year after serving a suspension? Thank you for the question, Mr. Mike. I don't think that is safe to say. I don't think any outcome is safe with Reuben Foster right now. There's so many directions this thing could go. Still a lot of evidence to be seen. Her testimony, I think, is huge for this. And if there's a video backing up that testimony, I think that's the biggest part. And so I think a judge could look at that and be like, look, you guys don't have a case. Or the DA could look at all this stuff and hear the testimony and be like, okay, we can't try this case. But there's other witnesses. There's other evidence. There's other things that are in this police report that Reuben Foster allegedly did. So that could still go forward. So even with that testimony, he's not out of the woods. So there's just no safe there's no safety in this at all with Reuben Foster. He's got to prove to have been clean in this domestic violence case, or he's gone, I think. But if it's just the pot and just the weapon, I think he's going to be okay for now. But he's still going to be in trouble with the league, and he's still going to be in trouble with the team. You know, he's definitely on two strikes right now. Let's go to 904 Niners Nation on Twitter, who asks, do you guys have an early preseason draft crush? This was directed to both Nick and myself. I'm going to take this one. I know that Nick is not scouting the 2019 draft yet. I think he's still looking after the 2018 draft right now and figuring out who all these guys are. With his fantasy football prep as well. But the 2019 draft, I will say no, I don't have a draft crush yet. I haven't gotten that deep into the class. There are some players I like. I mean, right off the bat, it's Ed Oliver and Nick Bosa, who is Joey Bosa's brother, and he's almost a carbon copy of Joey Bosa. I can't say whether I think I like him better or worse than Bosa. It's going to be hard for me to like him as much as Joey Bosa because I really had him as one of the top two players in the draft last year. But Nick Bosa, Ed Oliver, defensive linemen, those are two guys to watch. They're both big-bodied players that could play defensive end. Ed Oliver plays defensive tackle, but he's built, I think, more like an NFL defensive end, as I think where he will end up playing, but could play inside as well. So those are the two stud players I'm looking at right now in the 2019 draft. You know who is the early draft crush favorite, though, I will say, for Kyle Shanahan? Because he loves that speed. Bryce Love, running back out of Stanford, who can just flat out blaze. I know Kyle Shanahan's going to love him, and who knows if he goes too high for Kyle Shanahan to actually have a chance to draft him. And they already got their guy and paid a lot of money for Jerick McKinnon, but I could see Kyle Shanahan being like, ooh, I like that speed. I like that burst from Bryce Love. Moving on to a question on Twitter from Raul. I like this question. Let's get into this. So he says, we're a month away from Soccer World Cup, and there's all this frenzy about national teams convocations. If there were, good word by the way, convocations, if there was an American Football World Cup and you guys were national coaches, who would your 10 chosen to start be? Ooh, he says number one, of course, is Jimmy G. Let's see. So you had to, this is interesting because soccer, you're obviously playing both ways. What if you had to make a football team where players had to go both ways? That's the way I kind of looked at this question at first. You could just do offense and defense of 11 guys. So he's got Jimmy G penciled in. I'm not going to argue with Raul. I'm going to let you have Jimmy G there. Although if I was looking at this, you know, maybe Russell Wilson. If you wanted someone who could play both ways, a little more athleticism, play some free safety or something like that. Aaron Rodgers even would be a great call. Deshaun Watson maybe. But so Jimmy G's plugged in as your quarterback. I think he played a little linebacker in college, actually. So maybe that's where you plug him in on defense to be the heady leader of the defense, playing linebacker or strong safety or something like that. How about this? Okay, Joe Staley, he's one of my guys. He was the highest rated, I believe the second highest rated maybe, offensive tackle in the NFL last year. He could play a little both ways. Offensive tackle, he played tight end early on in college and in high school, I think, before he bulked up. Played a little defensive tackle as well. Got to go Aaron Donald. He could absolutely play some interior offensive line, play defensive tackle, maybe play guard if you're looking for players to play both ways. Talked about Joey Bosa earlier, stud defensive end. He's strong as an ox, man. I'd put him at center on offense and also have him coming off the edge on defense at, you know, 280 pounds or whatever he weighs. He's just a freak athlete and freak monster. DeForest Buckner, with his length, he could play offensive tackle. I think actually he might have been recruited. Maybe it was Eric Armstead. Might be getting them confused. One of them, I think recruited by some schools to play offensive tackle, and even NFL teams were looking at him thinking maybe he should be an offensive tackle rather than a defensive lineman. I think that might have been why he went to Oregon, is because they wanted him to play defensive line and playing that 3-4 scheme. But DeForest Buckner, he would be one of my defensive linemen who could also kick out and play some offensive tackle on offense. Antonio Brown, got to go with the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. He's got those quicks. He could lock up some guys on defense, play some cornerback. Jalen Ramsey, wide receiver / cornerback combo. Stud, he could play safety for you if you wanted him to. Julio Jones. Julio Jones could play linebacker. He could play. Julio Jones is bigger than Telvin Smith, who plays linebacker for the Jaguars. Julio Jones, stud, wide receiver. He could play linebacker. He could play safety. Miles Jack, he was an awesome running back early on at UCLA, freak athlete. So linebacker running back combo there. That's 10. I'm gonna reflect this last part. I'm gonna bounce this back to the listeners. I want to hear from you guys. Hit me up on Twitter @BD Peacock. who's the last guy on this roster? Who I'm missing? We need one more player. Someone that could possibly play both ways. American Football World Cup. You get 11 guys. You got to play offense and defense. We got Jimmy G. We got Joe Staley. We got Aaron Donald, Joey Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Antonio Brown, Jalen Ramsey, Julio Jones, Miles Jack. We need one more guy. Let's move along to some emails here. We got an email from Rodney. He says, Aloha, Brian. Aloha yourself, Rodney. He says, your fans are right. Can't wait to listen to your podcast on the way to work, especially when we now have Bluetooth technology. Well, thank you very much, Rodney. I appreciate that. He says a couple questions. Rodney always likes to sneak in a few. We'll see how this goes. How do you think Robert Saleh did as a first-year defensive coordinator? Is 1 year too small of a sample size? Yeah, it's too small to really to draw a complete, to give him a final grade, but I was impressed with Robert Saleh. I love his scheme. I think players that were already 49ers played better. I think he allows his players to play fast. I love the all gas, no breaks mentality. And so for those reasons, I think Robert Saleh is a very good defensive coordinator. I think his scheme is sound. I think multiple teams now have proved around the league, Seahawks, Falcons, Jaguars. And now the Chargers are also running that scheme with Gus Bradley over there. Those teams have proven that this is a very good scheme and it's a good defense. And you get fast players, and they've added some more talent now to that. I'm excited for those things. I think the one question for me is pass rush, and that's not Robert Saleh's fault necessarily if he doesn't have the bullets of an edge rusher to come off the corner and get quarterbacks. But aside from that, I'm excited about Robert Saleh and his prospects as a defensive coordinator. So I'm all in on Robert Saleh after seeing him as defensive coordinator for 1 year. Rodney asks, also going back a few years, I'm still not clear on why Jim Harbaugh was fired. Not complaining. Well, back then I did, but I do like this regime's cohesion working together. Jim Harbaugh was fired because he couldn't get along with people, I think, is the number one reason. It definitely obviously wasn't because of how his teams did, because he was a great coach. I think he wore on his players. You saw some guys starting to retire. I think it was tough to play for Harbaugh, even if they respected him and didn't necessarily not like playing for him. I think it was hard on players, and I think people in the organization, number one being Jed York. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Jed York is the guy who's in charge, and I don't think he liked Harbaugh. There was some crazy stuff I've heard about behind-the-scenes stuff that maybe Jim Harbaugh didn't respect, didn't show proper respect for the owner of his football team as a coach, as someone should. If you want them to sign your paychecks, so I think that's where Jim Harbaugh went wrong. And at the time, it was an awful firing for the product on the field. But I think you're right, Rodney. Most people now are like, okay, you know, that sucked. That was weird. That was awkward. But really like where things are going now. So, you know, you're okay with it. You know, you break up with that ex-girlfriend and things are weird and things are terrible. Then you find another girlfriend, a better girlfriend. You're like, oh, you know, maybe I like this girl a lot better. She's a lot nicer, a lot easier to hang out with. Maybe this one I can put a ring on. So, we'll see if Kyle Shanahan can put a ring on it. Then we'll really know for sure that he's the one, right? Three, let's go for it. I like it. Two for two. Let's go 3 for 3 here with Rodney. One of my favorite players who I thought had a cool name was safety Terrence Chet Brooks. Yeah, I remember Chet Brooks. He was a hard hitter for a smaller, strong safety. Another one who had a cool name was a defensive tackle, Pierce Holt. Yes, definitely from the glory days there. I was bummed when he signed with the then division rival. Again, mahalo for the podcast. Oh, yeah, the last part wasn't a question. He just wanted to drop some names. So thank you for that, Rodney. I appreciate the email. All right, let's get to a couple more of these. Let's go to Christian via email. He says, enjoy the podcast, and nothing seems like Groundhog Day with the discussion you have every weekday. My question is, towards our running back number two spot, we currently have Williams, Breida, McNichols, Mostert, Wilson dueling it out. Who do you believe will run with it? Let's see. RB2, I think, is going to be Matt Breida. I just don't think you can push aside what he did last year. And I know they brought in, obviously, Jerick McKinnon to start over him, so they didn't love him that much. And there's going to be competition there. But in the end, I got to go because I've seen him do it, and I haven't seen Williams do it yet. But I think Williams is definitely going to make the roster. I think McNichols has an extreme uphill battle to making the roster at all. And then I think Wilson maybe has a shot at the practice squad. But I'd be very surprised if any running backs other than the four of Jerick McKinnon, Matt Breida, Joe Williams and Mostert make the roster, and that's the order I would probably put them in likelihood of being the running back too. Christian also says Aaron Donald hasn't signed his contract with the Rams. What are the possibilities of him leaving? What if he signs with the 49ers? Well, if he does leave via free agency, I think the 49ers would have to be all over him just because he's such a great player. Now, they're kind of blocked there because he would be playing ideally the same position that DeForest Buckner's playing as that three technique, and he fits that position so well. But no, man, I can't see him leaving the Rams, and I'm actually going to star this question. This is something I'm going to ask Brad Motter when we do the Locked On Rams, Locked On 49ers crossover podcast next week, hopefully. I'm going to ask him about that Aaron Donald contract situation because he's probably got a lot more insight onto what's actually going on there. But I got to believe. I mean, they'll throw the franchise tag if they have to. They're not. The Rams are stupid. They're not going to lose probably the best defender right now in the NFL. All right, one more email. This one from Peter. He said, I just got done listening to the Sims and Lefko podcast. There's a picture with Kittle, 50 Cent, Jimmy G, Kyle, and his son Carter. Sims said Kyle named his son Carter after Little Wayne. Apparently that's Little Wayne's real name. I did not know that. Will you name your soon-to-be-born baby after a famous person? I don't think I will. We're still actually, we had a few girl names picked out. We found out it was going to be a boy. We didn't have any boy names ready. My wife had a bunch of girl names, and you know, we were kind of on board with a few, but we haven't really found one that's stuck yet as far as boy names go. I don't think we're going to go the famous person route. We got some family names maybe to choose from. I'm waiting for something to jump out, and it hasn't yet. We still have a little over a month, I think. You know, hopefully we have a little over a month to figure this out. So, I'm not sure where we're going to go with it. There's been a lot of funny names that I like that I throw by her, and she's not going to go for it. But I don't think I'm going to do that to my kid. I think it's going to be a pretty standard name. Hopefully we can find something that we agree on, something that we like. Probably not going to go naming, you know, because it's funny because my wife's a Dodgers fan. She's from L.A. originally. I'm a Giants fan. And so I would love to, you know, name my kid after Will Clark or Willie Mays or, you know, some of the players I grew up idolizing. Obviously never got to see Willie Mays play. She's definitely not going to go for that. And I'm definitely not going to go for any Dodgers related names there either. I allowed her to use a Dodger figure on was our cat is named Vin after Vin Scully. If there's one thing Dodgers related that I'm cool with, it's Vin Scully, who's one of the best broadcasters of all time. Me being a broadcaster, and so I got much love for Vin Scully. That's about it as far as the Dodger stuff goes, so definitely not going to be any names coming from that. So that also makes it so I can't really go with the San Francisco Giants route either. Maybe we could throw some 49ers related names out there. I don't know. What do you guys think? We're still taking submissions on the name for the soon-to-be little baby peacock. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for all of you folks who have been submitting email and Twitter questions. Always a lot of fun to find new things to talk about, and especially in the off season, it's almost necessary to do a daily show to bounce things off of you guys. So I always appreciate everybody who does get involved, and we're going to continue doing it throughout the off season. So keep those questions coming on Twitter at @BDPeacock or email at LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And I will talk to you guys next week right here on Locked On 49ers.